We're on, huh? Happy Sabbath to everyone. We have a beautiful day today. Hopefully we can get some good out of this day and in here, because it is still cold outside. Today I want to speak to you about the lesson of Balaam. As we remember, Balaam was a prophet that's mentioned back in the Old Testament. And he started out as a prophet of God. Somewhere along the way, he went astray. So let's begin by turning to Revelation chapter 2. In Revelation chapter 2, begin verse 12, it says, and this is the message that Jesus Christ is giving to the seven churches, and it says, "And to the angel of the church in Pergamos write, these things says he who has a sharp two-edged sword." And now skip to verse 14. He's still talking to the church in Pergamos. He says, in verse 13, he tells them all the good things they've done, all their positive. But then in verse 14, he says, "But I have a few things against you, because you have there those who hold the teaching of Balaam, who taught Balak to cast a stumbling block before the children of Israel, and to eat things sacrificed to idols, and to commit fornication." So somewhere along the way, Balaam gives some advice that led to some really bad things happening. Now, what is he talking about here? Well, let's turn to Numbers chapter 25. Let's read about this incident. Numbers 25, verse 1. In Numbers 25, verse 1, it says, "And Israel dwelt in Acacia Grove," and I'm reading Fred Coulter's translation, so some of these names he's actually kind of translated into English here, the meaning of them. "Israel dwelt in Acacia Grove, and the people began to commit whoredom with the daughters of Moab. And they called the people to the sacrifices of their gods. And the people ate and bowed down to their gods. And Israel joined himself to Baal Peor, and the anger of the Lord was kindled against Israel. And the Lord said to Moses, 'Take all the heads of the people and impale them before the Lord facing the sun, so that the fierce anger of the Lord may be turned away from Israel.' And Moses said to the judges of Israel, 'Every one of you kill his men who were joined to Baal Peor. And behold, a man of the children of Israel came and brought to his brethren a woman of Midian in the sight of Moses and in the sight of the congregation of the children of Israel, who were weeping before the door of the tabernacle of the congregation.'" This guy must have had a lot of guts or something to try to do this. It says, "And when Phinehas, the son of Eleazar, the son of Aaron the priest, saw it, he rose up from among the congregation, took a spear in his hand. And he went after the man of Israel into the tent, and pierced both of them through, the man of Israel and the woman through her belly. So the plague was stayed from the children of Israel." Verse 9, "And those that died in the plague were 24,000. So you see, these Moabites, and we're going to go back and kind of go through the story here in a few verses, the couple chapters before. They couldn't. They wanted some way to destroy Israel. So what did they do? Well, they got them involved in their religion. They got them involved in their immorality. You know, they sent all the people, you know, "Let's go down here and let's send all pretty girls down here and talk to these guys, and let's invite them to a party, and let's all get everybody drunk, and let's go do all this stuff, and we'll get them to worship their God." And God will get angry at them, and he did. And it caused the death of 24,000 people. Now, the question is, and according to what we're told Jesus Christ tells us in Revelation, Balaam is the one that gave them the advice to do this. Why did Balaam do this? And, you know, what lesson can we learn from his sin? Well, let's go back a few chapters to chapter 22 of Numbers. And I'm probably going to read the whole chapter of 22 and skip through the next couple chapters, but I think we need to do this to really understand what's going on here. Numbers 22, verse 1, it says, "Then the children of Israel set out and pitched in the plains of Moab on the side of Jordan by Jericho. And Balak, son of Zippor, saw all that Israel had done to the Amorites. And Moab was much afraid of the people because they were many. And Moab was worried because of the children of Israel." Now, this is understandable. You have a nation here, and then you have 2.5-3 million people that are coming into your country, and they've already came in and they've already destroyed a couple of the powerful kingdoms right next to you and taken over their land. You probably would be worried and afraid too. But you see, the problem is, if we go back earlier on, we'll find out that Moses had already sent emissaries to talk to the Moabites, to the king, and said, "We're not going to attack you. We're not going to bother you. We're your brothers. You know, we'll be peaceful. All we ask is safe passage, and you know, and we won't take anything. If we want any water or food, we'll buy it. We'll pay for it." So, the Moabites had already been assured that there would be no problem, but they didn't believe it, and obviously, they did not serve the true God. By this time, the descendants of Moab, even though they were descendants of Lot, by this time they were pagans. You know, they may have believed in Yahweh, but only as one of the gods, not as the only God. Verse 4, And Moab said to the elders of Midian. Okay, so they were on friendly terms with the Midianites. "Now this company is licking up all around us, as the ox licks up the grass of the field. And Balak the son of Zippor was king of the Moabites at that time. Therefore he sent messengers to Balaam the son of Beor to Pethor by the river of the land of the children of his people to call him." Basically, this was, Pethor was in Mills in Mesopotamia, is where it was. "Saying, Behold, a people has come out of Egypt. Behold, they cover the face of the earth, and they are dwelling across from me. Therefore, I pray you, come now and curse this people for me, for they are too mighty for me. Perhaps I shall prevail so that we may strike them, so that I may drive them out of the land, for I know that he whom you bless is blessed, and he whom you curse is cursed." Now, it's obvious from this scripture that Balaam was fairly well famous at that time. That through the prophecies that had been given him, he had become famous, that when he was given a prophecy, that whatever he spoke came true. Now, which should make sense, because as we'll see, at this point, he was a prophet of God. When God gives a prophecy, it's true, and he's fully able to make it happen. If it was just some divination, some pagan god and a demon, well, it might be true, might not be true. But it was obvious that if Balaam gave a prophecy, it came true. And he had become fairly, his prophecy had been fairly famous. It says, "And the elders of Moab and the elders of Midian set out with the rewards of divination in their hand. And they came to Balaam and spoke the words of Balak to him." Okay, rewards of divination. Back at that time, you know, if you went to a soothsayer or you went to a prophet of one of these gods, you know, you basically had to pay him to do what they were doing. Now, a true prophet of God, obviously, did not do it for money. But you have to realize these people's mindset. And it says, "And he said to them, Stay here tonight, and I will bring you word again as the Lord shall speak to me. And the leaders of Moab stayed with Balaam." So he went, okay, and went to God and said, you know, to God, said, "These people come to me and they're asking this of me. Now, what do you want me to do?" God came to Balaam and said, "What men are these with you?" And Balaam said to God, "Balak the son of Zippor, king of Moab, has sent them to me, saying, Behold, a people has come out of Egypt, which covers the face of the earth. Come now, curse them for me. Perhaps I shall be able to overcome them and drive them out." And God said to Balaam, "You shall not go with them. You shall not curse the people, for they are blessed." And Balaam rose up in the morning and said to the leaders of Balak, "Go into your land, for the Lord refuses to let me go with you." He did what God told him. Up to this point, he was obedient to God. God said, "You're not going with these people. the people they're wanting you to curse are blessed. Tell them to go home. He obeyed God. Verse 14, it says, "And the leaders of Moab rose up, and they went to Balak and said, 'Balaam refuses to come with us.' And Balak sent leaders again, more numerous and more honorable than those." So, you know, it might be like, say it's the president. The first time he sent some lowly ambassadors. Well, this time he sent the vice president and the secretary of state. The big shots to talk to him. And they came to Balaam and said to him, "Thus says Balak, son of Zippor, please let nothing hinder you from coming to me, for I will raise you up to a very great honor, and I will do whatever you say to me. Please come and curse this people for me." So he was offering him lots of wealth. He was offering him honor and position. "And Balaam answered and said to the servants of Balak, 'If Balak would give me his house full of silver and gold, I cannot go beyond the word of the Lord, my God, to do less or more.'" Now you notice something. He says, "the Lord, my God." He was a servant of the true God at this point. And he gave the right answer. "There's no amount of money can buy me. I've got to do what God tells me." But the problem begins in verse 19. "But please now stay here also this night so that I may know what more the Lord will say to me." So, what did he do? He went back to God and he kind of said, "Well, God, you know, come on, can I go with them? Let me go with them." You know, this stuff started turning in his head about, "Well, I can become rich off of this." And this is not a situation like we just heard in a Bible study about, you know, you just keep praying and asking God for something. You see, in a situation like that, we don't know the answer yet. Or maybe the answer is not no, but it's not yet. God had already spoke to him and told him no. He already knew the answer was no. He shouldn't have been going back asking again. But he did. Why? Even though he gave the right answer to the representatives of Balak, he wanted this. This was tempting. Verse 20, "And God came to Balaam at night and said to him, 'If the men come to call you, rise up, go with them. But only the word which I shall say to you, that shall you do.'" Now you're saying, okay, well, it worked. God told him to go. But as we're going to see a few verses later, God wasn't very happy. "And Balaam rose up in the morning and saddled his donkey and went with the rulers of Moab. And God's anger was kindled because he went." Now, wait a minute. God gave him permission to go last night, and this morning he's mad at him. What does that mean? Why? Well, let's think about this. Some of you in this room have children. Have you ever told your child no? And then they come and, "Oh, please, Dad. Oh, please, Mom. Oh, please." And they beg and they beg until they drive you crazy. And you say, "Oh, go ahead and do it." And then you sit and think about it. And the longer you think about it, the madder you get. And I think this is kind of the situation with God. We have to realize Balaam was his child. He loved him. He had a good relationship with him up to this point. But then he started thinking about it, and he started noticing, reading Balaam's thoughts and what his motivation for wanting to go was. And it made God angry. It says, "And the angel of the Lord stood in the way as an enemy against him, and as he was riding upon his donkey and his two servants with him. Then the donkey saw the angel of the Lord standing in the way and his sword drawn in his hand. God sent an angel to turn him back. And the donkey turned aside out of the way and went into the field. And Balaam struck the donkey to turn her back into the way. But the angel of the Lord stood in the path of the vineyards, a wall on this side and a wall on that side. And when the donkey saw the angel of the Lord, she pushed herself into the wall and crushed Balaam's foot against the wall. And he struck her again. And the angel of the Lord went further and stood in the narrow place where there was no way to turn either to the right hand or to the left. And when the donkey saw the angel of the Lord, she fell down under Balaam, and Balaam's anger was kindled, and he struck the donkey with a staff." What I think is amazing about this up to this point is, don't you think that sometime or another that a little light might have went on in his head of what's going on? Why is this happening? It says, and the Lord opened the mouth of the donkey and said to Balaam, what have I done to you that you have beat me these three times? And Balaam said to the donkey, because you've mocked me, I wish there was a sword in my hand, for now I would kill you. And you know, it also strikes me here that you think that if the light didn't go on his head before, it would now. Because guess what? Donkeys can't speak. Nor are they intelligent enough to have a conversation if they could speak. You would think that the fact that this donkey was now speaking would be an obvious fact that it's a miracle and God is involved. But what's he do? He just gets mad and wants to have an argument with the donkey. Now what we're going to see here is he was so dead set on doing what he wanted to that he was starting to lose his reasoning powers. The scripture says that. We'll get to it here in a little bit. And the donkey said to Balaam, am I not your donkey upon which you have ridden ever since I was yours to this day? Was I ever known so to do? And he said, no. So you see, this donkey had always been good and faithful. It had never pulled any of these stunts of trying to take off and go the wrong way. It did it three times in a row. So like I said, you think Balaam would have got a little idea when this started happening that maybe God doesn't want me to go. It says, then the Lord opened the eyes of Balaam, and he saw the angel of the Lord standing in the way, and his sword drawn in his hand. And he bowed down his head and fell on his face. And the angel of the Lord said to him, why have you beaten your donkey these three times? You know, he wasn't happy about that. You know, God, animals are not, they're not going to be in part in God's kingdom as we are. They're not made in the image of God, but God doesn't want us to abuse our animals either. He wants us to be good to them. He said, why have you beaten your donkey these three times? Behold, I came out to withstand you because your way is perverse before me. That's why God got angry. His way was perverse. His reason for wanting to go was not a right reason. It wasn't to go and represent God to these people, to be able to bring the light of God to these people, to take God's message to these people. He had a wrong reason for wanting to go. He said, and the donkey saw me and turned from me these three times. Unless she had turned from me, surely now I also would have killed you and saved her alive. And Balaam said to the angel of the Lord, I have sinned, for I did not know that you stood in the way against me. Now therefore, if it displeases you, I will go back again. So finally, the light went on. And there was some level of repentance on Balaam's part. At least, or you know, there whether it was complete at this point, we don't know, but we know that it didn't last. So if it displeases you, I'll go back. Well, he should have known it was displeasing God. But because his attitude had changed and he was somewhat repentant here, so the angel of the Lord said to Balaam, go with the men, but only the word that I speak to you, that shall you speak. So Balaam went with the leaders of Balak. So God kind of got him humbled a little bit, and God said, okay, we'll let him go, and then I can use this situation. I can use this situation to bring the message I want to bring and be a witness. And the angel of the Lord said, okay, that's verse 35. Verse 36. And when Balak heard that Balaam had come, he went out to meet him at the city of Moab at the border of Arnon, which is in the outermost border. And Balak said to Balaam, did I not earnestly send you to call you? Why did you not come to me? Am I not indeed able to lift you up to honor? Balaam said to Balak, lo, I have come to you. Have I now any power to do or at all to say anything? The word that God puts in my mouth, that I shall speak. Okay, you see, he said he's saying the right thing here. This is the right thing to say. And Balaam went to Balak, and they came to Kirjath-Huzoth. And Balak sacrificed oxen and sheep and sent to Balaam and to the leaders that were with him. And it came to pass on the next day, Balak took Balaam and brought him up into the high places of Baal so that from there he might see the extent of the people. Chapter 23, verse 1. And Balaam said to Balak, build me here 7 altars and prepare here 7 oxen and 7 rams for me. Balak did as Balaam had spoken. And Balak and Balaam offered on every altar a bull and a ram. And Balaam said to Balak, stand by your burnt offering and I will go. Perhaps the Lord will come to meet me and whatever he reveals to me I will tell you. And he went to the high place. And so, in verse 5 it says, and the Lord put a word in Balaam's mouth, and he said, return to Balak and say thus to him. And what he did was give a blessing on Israel. I'm not going to read that at this point. He didn't curse him. Then verse 11 it says, and Balak said to Balaam, what have you done to me? I took you to curse my enemies. Behold, you kept on blessing them. And he answered and said, must I not be careful to speak that which the Lord has put in my mouth? So, they go on, and they do this again. And they go somewhere else. They offer more offerings and so forth and so on. And in verse 15, the second time he says, and he said to Balak, stand here by your burnt offering while I meet him yonder. And the Lord met Balaam and put a word in his mouth and said, go to Balak and say this. So, he gives another blessing on Israel. Verse 25, it says, and Balak said to Balaam, neither curse them at all, nor bless them at all. In other words, just keep your mouth shut, don't say anything, because you're messing things up for me. But Balaam answered and said to Balak, did I not tell you, saying, all that the Lord speaks, I must do? So, Balak wanted to try it again. Well, let's go over here and look at him. And so they did the same thing, and they offered more offerings. But then in verse 20, chapter 24, verse 1, it says, and Balaam saw that it pleased the Lord to bless Israel, and he did not go, as at other times, to seek for enchantments, but he set his face toward the wilderness. He didn't even go and try to ask God at this point, because he knew it was a waste of time. But you notice that both of these other times, he still went to God and tried to get God to go along with what he wanted so that he could benefit from it. Finally here in chapter 24, verse 1, he sees that he's not going to do that. So he don't even go try. He's finally got it through his head that God has said no. And it says, verse 2, and Balaam lifted his eyes and saw Israel pitched according to the tribes, and the Spirit of God came upon him. And then the rest of the chapter is another prophecy of blessing to Israel. Then in verse 25 it says, and Balaam rose up and went and returned to his place, and Balak also went his way. So you see, at this point, Balaam figured out he wasn't ever going to convince God. He gave up and he went home. But something happened between there and the next chapter. Because we're told by Jesus Christ that Balaam is the one who gave the advice for the Moabites and the Midianites to do what they did to lead Israel astray. You know, he went home and he started thinking about, man, I'd like to have that money. I'd like to be wealthy. I'd like to be powerful. I'd like to be rich. But I can't get God to go along with me. Well, how is there any way I can figure out some way to do this on my own? He said, oh, yeah. God doesn't allow them to worship more than the other gods. God doesn't allow people to be involved in all this immorality. So if I tell them if I go give them the advice, try to get the Israelites involved in your religion and in your way of life, God will destroy them. So that's what he did. That's exactly what he did. But you know, did it really pay off for Balaam? The answer is no. Because he died along with the enemies of God in Israel. Turn to Numbers 31. Numbers 31, beginning verse 1. It says, and the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, avenge the children of Israel, the Midianites. Afterwards you shall be gathered to your people. And Moses spoke to the people, saying, arm some of yourselves for the war, and let them go against the Midianites, and avenge the Lord on Midian. And you shall send to the war 1,000 from every tribe through all the tribes of Israel. So there were delivered out of the thousands of Israel 1,000 of every tribe, 12,000 armed for war. And Moses sent them to the war, 1,000 of every tribe. He sent them and Phinehas, the son of Eleazar the priest, to the war with the holy instruments and the silver trumpets to blow in his hand. And they warred against the Midianites as the Lord commanded Moses, and they killed all the males. And they killed the kings of Midian, besides the rest of their slain, Evi and Rechem and Zur and Hur and Reba, five kings of Midian. They also killed Balaam, the son of Beor, with a sword. So you see, at some point or another, he came up with this idea and he came back. He came back and started dealing with the Moabites and the Midianites. And he continued to live with the Midianites. Evidently, he had got his wealth and his position, and you know, and he was living the high life here among the elite in Midian. But didn't pay for it, because he paid with his life. And brethren, there's a great possibility that he probably paid with his eternal life, because he turned from God and gave advice to try to cause the people of God to sin and turn away from God. You know, and that reminds me of what Jesus Christ said. He said, you know, woe to offenses. He said, offenses shall come, but you know, if anyone causes one of these of mine to stumble, it's better for him to be cast into the sea with a millstone around his neck and drowned in the sea. And Balaam was doing such a thing as that. You know, but his motivation. You know, Peter tells us about Balaam's motivation in 2 Peter. 2 Peter chapter 2. Second Peter 2, verse 15 and 16. And he's talking about false prophets here, and he says, who have abandoned the straight way. They have gone astray, having followed the way of Balaam, the son of Beor, who loved the reward of wickedness. But he received a rebuke from his own transgression. The dumb donkey, speaking in a man's voice, restrained the madness of the prophet. Remember I said earlier that he was kind of losing his mind? I mean, obviously, when he was sitting there arguing with the donkey, he wasn't really in a rational mind. But he loved the reward of wickedness. He was getting a reward for this. It was the wealth. It was the prestige and the power and all of the things that come with that wealth that he was seeking, that he wanted. You know, and most likely, he was probably just a pretty well normal, common man. And when the opportunity came that he could become rich from the gift that God had given him, he couldn't understand why God wouldn't work with him to get what he wants. And we have to be careful about that. That's something we cannot let happen to us. You know, he allowed his desire for wealth and position to lead him away from God. And we're given instructions in the Scriptures about greed and covetousness and the desire for wealth and position. Colossians chapter 3. Here the Apostle Paul is speaking to us. Colossians chapter 3, verses 5 through 7. Paul instructs us, he says, therefore put to death your members which are on earth, sexual immorality, uncleanness, inordinate affection, evil desires, and covetousness, which is idolatry. Because of these things, the wrath of God is coming upon the sons of disobedience, among whom you also once walked when you were living in these things. You notice he says, one of the things we need to avoid and get rid of is covetousness. And he says, which is idolatry. You notice all those other sins, they're bad. They'll cause us problems, and if we don't overcome them, they can keep us out of the kingdom. But there's only one of them that is idolatry. Covetousness. Greed. People who become greedy, who have an inordinate desire for money and for wealth, they make that their God. That is their idol. And that's what happened to Balaam. he loved wealth more than he loved God, and he made wealth his new god. And he was willing to do whatever it took to get it, when he saw a way to get it. Hebrews chapter 13, verse 5. Here, it's plainly said, do not allow the love of money to influence your behavior. That's exactly what he did. He allowed the love of money to influence his behavior. But be satisfied with what you have, for he has said, in no way will I ever leave you. No, I will never forsake you in any way. God promises to take care of us. He's not going to leave us. Doesn't promise us we'll be rich. Doesn't promise us we'll be wealthy. We'll be powerful. That everybody's going to be giving us praise. He does promise he will take care of us. And if you love money, it will influence your behavior, because you have. If you love money, you're going to find some way to get it, and it's going to influence how you live your life. Now, some people, they may do immoral things. They may go out and rob. They may steal. They may lie. They may cheat. Some people may not do that. It might just be, I could have a better job if I work on the Sabbath. Or, maybe I'm not going to do that. That's an open direct commandment breaker there. But, maybe I'm going to work a lot of overtime. Okay? Do you need to work that overtime to pay your bills, or do you just want the extra money and you're sacrificing time with God and with your family to get it? That could it could still take you away from God. 1 Timothy chapter 3. 1 Timothy 3, beginning in verse 1. It says, faithful is the saying, if any man aspires to be an overseer, which I think that in King James it says bishop, he desires a good work. Now then, it is obligatory that the overseer be blameless, the husband of one wife, vigilant, serious-minded, respectable, hospitable, skillful in teaching, not given to much wine, not a bully, not greedy for selfish gain, but kind, not a quarreler, not a lover of money. Then also in verse 8 it says, in the same way also, deacons who serve must be serious-minded, not hypocritical, not given to much wine, not greedy for selfish gain. It is an absolute mandatory. It is a qualification for that qualification be met by those that are true servants of God. Anyone who's a true minister of God is not going to be somebody who's greedy, who's worried about money, who's worried about driving the nicest car and having the nicest house. I mean, no condemnation to anybody, and I'm not trying to condemn anybody here. But we can look back at a lot of the ministers of the world, and unfortunately a lot of the ministers in our past, and we can see that sometimes they were the ones always had to have the nicest houses and the biggest, fanciest car and the nicest suits and the biggest bank accounts. And I hope for their sake that sooner or later that they don't let those things be their motivation. But if it is their motivation, it could cause the same thing to happen to them that happened to Balaam. It's not what it's about. That's not what about being a minister or serving God or being a prophet or whatever thing that God uses you, that's not what it's about. It's not about worldly wealth. Jesus Christ gives us some teaching about this in Matthew chapter 13. And I think most of us are familiar with this. This is the parable of the sower. Beginning in verse 3, it says, and he spoke many things to them in parables, saying, behold, the sower went out to sow. And as he was sowing, some of the seed fell by the way, and the birds came and devoured them. And some fell upon the rocky places where they did not have much soil. And immediately they sprang up because the soil was not deep enough. But after the sun rose, they were scorched, and because they did not have roots, they dried up. And some of the seed fell among the thorns, and the thorns grew up and choked them. And some seed fell on the good ground and yielded fruit, some 100-fold, some 60-fold, some 30-fold. The one who has ears to hear, let him hear. Now drop down verses 18 through 22. He says, therefore hear the parable of the sower. When anyone hears the word of the kingdom and does not understand it, the wicked one comes and snatches away which was sown in his heart. This is the one that was sown by the way. Now the one who was sown on the rocky place is the one who hears the word and immediately receives it with joy. But because he has no root in himself, he does not endure. For when tribulation or persecution arises because of the word, he is quickly offended. He says, and the one who was sown among the thorns is the one who hears the word, but the cares of this life and the deceitfulness of riches choke the word, and it becomes unfruitful. And we have to be careful, because that could happen to any one of us. It's so easy to get caught up in trying to survive, trying to pay the bills, trying to do this and that and something else. And if you actually have a good job, you actually have a little bit of money, sometimes it makes it worse. Sometimes people, the more you have, the more you want. And that those riches and having the nice things and being able to live the nice lifestyle and keeping up with the Joneses can lead us astray. Like I said, even about talking about working the overtime, okay, you're poor. I'm poor. That's fine. Do I have enough to pay the bills and eat? Yeah. If I have to work overtime to do that, then maybe I need to work overtime. But if I don't need the overtime, is that overtime worth not having time to pray and study? Is it worth not spending time with my family or my friends, having a relationship with them? That's the questions we have to ask. Because whatever we earn in this life, we're not taking it with us. Not one penny of it. A multi-billionaire is not going to take any more with him when he leaves than I will. And sometimes I'm lucky if I have $20 in my pocket. We need to understand that. Jesus taught us the right view that we should have of wealth and what our real goals should be. Turn to Luke chapter 12. Beginning in verse 13. And here, Jesus was teaching the multitudes, and it says, verse 13 said, "Then one from the multitude said to him, 'Master, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me.' And he said to him, 'Man, who's appointed me a judge or a divider over you?' And he said to them, 'Watch out and keep yourself from covetousness. For one's life, no one's life is in the abundance of the thing that he possesses.' And he spoke a parable to them, saying, 'The ground of a certain rich man brought forth abundantly. And he was reasoning with himself, saying, "What shall I do? For I have nowhere to lay up my fruit." He said, "I will do this. I will tear down my granaries and build greater ones, and there I will lay up for my produce and my good things." See, this man was already wealthy. He already had more than he needed. But he wasn't satisfied. He wanted more. He says, "Then I will say to my soul, 'Soul, you have many good things laid up for many years. Take your rest, eat, drink, and be merry.' But God said to him, 'Fool, this night your soul shall be required of you, and to whom will you leave that which you prepared for yourself? And so it shall be to the one who lays up treasure for himself and is not rich towards God.' And he said to his disciples, 'Because of this I tell you, do not be anxious about your life, what you shall eat, nor about your body, what you shall put on. The life is more than food, and the body is more than clothing. Consider the ravens, for they do not sow nor reap, neither have they a storehouse or granary, but God feeds them. Of how much greater value are you than the birds? And which of you, by taking careful thought, has the power to add one cubit to his stature? Therefore, if you do not have the power to do even the least, why are you anxious about the rest? Consider the lilies, how they grow. They do not labor, nor do they spin. But I tell you, not even Solomon in all of his glory was adorned like one of these. But if God so adorns the grass that today is in the field and tomorrow is cast into the oven, how much more shall He clothe you, O you of little faith? Then do not be seeking that which you shall eat or what you shall drink, and do not be anxious. Now, he's not saying we don't work and don't go to the store and buy something, and there's no preparation. He's saying don't be all worried about it, concerned about it. For the nations of this world seek after these things, and your Father knows that you have need of these things. But seek the kingdom of God, and all these things shall be added to you. Do not be afraid, little flock, for your Father delights in giving you the kingdom. Sell your possessions and give alms. Make for yourselves purses that do not grow old, an unfailing treasure in heaven where no thief can come near and no moth can destroy. You know, we're supposed to be generous. Give what we can give. And you know what? If we give, we're going to have, because God, He loves a cheerful giver. You know, it was Solomon that talked about cast your bread on many waters and it'll come back to you. Tithing and giving offerings, God takes care of you. Giving and to others and helping others, if they're really in need, God will pay that back to you. It says, for where your treasure is, there will your heart be also. Our treasure, our heart, our treasure should be in God and His kingdom, in helping and serving other people. Not in a bank account downtown here. Not that there's wrong with having a little bit in the bank, but we need to be careful how we get it and how much importance we put upon it. And you know, thankfully in the Bible study, he covered Matthew 6. There were some of Matthew 6 I wanted to go through, but of course it probably made the sermon long anyway, but I still want to go to, we'll go to Matthew 6. I want to go to one verse, verse 24. Because most of what's said in Matthew 6 is the same as what we just read. And it said, but in verse 24 he says, no one is able to serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will hold to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and mammon. That is, riches, worldly things. And you see, that was where Balaam went wrong. He had served God for his whole life, or as long as we know. But he became covetous. He became greedy. He wanted money. And you cannot serve God and money. You cannot serve God and riches. You cannot serve God and your own greed. And so he fell away. And he was willing to do sinful, ungodly things to get what he wanted, and he lost his relationship with God. He lost his life. And I don't know, only God can know for sure, and probably his salvation. We should all pray as David did in Psalm 119:36. Psalm 119:36. David says, incline my heart to your testimonies and not to covetousness. Our heart, our mind, our thoughts should not be on money, on wealth, on all the things we can have in this world. They should be on God, His kingdom, His law, His way of life. That's where our focus should be. And we have to be careful, because those of us, even those of us that are basically, we consider ourselves poor, we can still let those things lead us astray. If we get the chance to have a little bit, or trying to have, you know, just a little bit more, we might get so focused on trying to have those things that they take our focus away from God, and we can slowly drift away. So let's learn from the example of Balaam And let's not follow that example.